All right, so we're doing Going Native Live. I know we missed this month on demand, but as I said, we were going to do it live. And we're here in Amsterdam, TechEd. We have two very special guests. But before there, I mean, I just wanted to kind of address some of the news. I'm sure you've seen in the blogs about support for XP. I know a lot of people had asked for it. And it was really nice that Steve and company listened. And, you know, we'll see what happens. So keep speaking your mind, keep talking, that's awesome. I also wanted to say that our dear friend Diego will no longer be on C9 Going Native Live. He's gonna be a sort of a C++ consultant on the outside. So you're still gonna see him, we're still gonna engage, but he probably won't be in the machine with me anymore. But we'll find somebody else, who knows. But we have two very special guests today. We got Steve Teixeira, who basically runs the future team for BC++. And of course, Kate Gregory, who's a C++ developer, .NET developer, great speaker. And we're going to talk about C++ AMP, Casablanca, Auto Vectorizer, Auto Parallelizer, and a lot of the stuff you guys use in your day-to-day lives. So with that said, I'm going to beam over and we're going to talk to our special guests. Right on.
Beam on over.
Beamed over. So Steve, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Nice to see you, I'm doing great.
Kate, always a pleasure.
So as you saw in the instructor, this is great. So we already have questions, but we'll get to those questions. I want to first kind of do an introduction a little bit and kind of see what you've been up to, Kate, lately. We haven't talked in a long time.
Since February.
Yes.
So, you know what, and since then, for the 4 or 5 months we've had since going native, the real live in-person thing, 100% of my work has been C++.
Wow.
For the first time this century.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, it's been, so it's very definitely a renaissance for me.
Yes.
It's just great. I mean, I'm very happy to be doing a ton of C++ work again.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Great. How about you, Steve? I mean, you've been really busy.
I've been renaissancing.
Yeah, you've been renaissancing, man.
Yeah, we've been, you know, our effort right now is landing the next version of Visual Studio.
Yep.
Really close. It's like on the kind of see the runway. There's no foam being sprayed or anything.
Yep.
It's going to be a smooth landing, just like our landing in Amsterdam.
Yes.
Earlier this week. I didn't even know we landed, by the way.
You didn't?
The plane was slowing down, and I was like, holy cow. Like,
why are we going so slow?
It was like the best landing ever.
Now, we're staying at the Renaissance Hotel. You understand what's going on
here? That's
right. The Renaissance is real.
There's a cosmic thing happening right now.
Rock and roll. So listen, people, this is Channel 9 Live is all about you engaging the very intelligent people. So please tweet questions. We have one right here from clearly a developer. And this is for Steve. Any news on the design decision of XP targeting?
Yes.
Do we need to opt in? Any limitations, sacrifices?
Can I say that I'm
really surprised that people are asking questions about XP? I had
no idea that this was important to the community at all.
Where did this question come from?
Here's the deal with Windows XP. We have made a little progress here in terms of the design. One of the things that limits our design freedom is our library stack needs to talk to the Windows SDK.
Mm-hmm.
The version 8 of the Windows SDK doesn't support Windows XP. And so while we want to support Windows XP from one Visual C++ compiler, from one set of Visual C++ libraries, we have to ask the developer, hey, which SDK do you want to target?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to target version 7.x that supports XP up until 7?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want to target Windows SDK version 8, which supports Vista up to 8? So as a developer, it becomes a multi-targeting experience.
Sure.
I have to choose. This binary, I want to support XP, or this binary, I don't want to support XP, but I want to support Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, from one binary, there's no way to have one binary that kind of lights up on Windows 8 and supports XP as well.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, the team is working through, what does that mean for the design? Probably if you're building an application that you want to run on XP, but also light up, with Windows 8 features when it runs on Windows 8, it'll be a collection of binaries built with the compiler targeting switched.
So in the case of Windows 8, you're talking about Windows RT. You're talking about the when you say light up, you mean targeting the new COM.
Yes, targeting either WinRT or even there's some new stuff in Win32 APIs as well that's only supported on Windows 8.
Right on.
Yeah.
Excellent. So the desktop survives.
Yes,
people
indeed.
Have been curious about it, but yeah, I mean, it's actually evolving. So, Kate, if you've been doing, well, how do you feel about the XP decision? I mean, you target multiple platforms, don't
listen,
you?
Listen, I mean, yeah, I do have some customers who are still on XP. I have some customers who are still using VB6. You know, the end of life decisions are less obvious out in the universe than they are when you're in Redmond.
Sure.
In a way, I was kind of looking forward to being able to have a whip to crack to make them get rid of their XP machines. But the reality is that there are some applications that it's going to be helpful for.
Excellent. Yeah,
so, and there are some VMs of XP, you know, for apps that can't run on anything after it.
Yeah.
And until there's a budget to update those apps, that's how that's going to work.
Yeah. Still a ton of XP running in the world.
Yes, there is. And I'm actually quite proud of that because that's what I worked on when I first started at Microsoft.
Oh, really?
So. You know, rock and roll. We made a good operating system,
suck.
Man.
People like it.
Still supporting.
It's still rocking and rolling. And C++ is so portable, right? I mean, we learned about that with the Windows Phone announcement in terms of one of the things that I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he was saying it was one of the strengths of the language is the portability factor.
Was this Joe Belfiore in his announcement?
Yeah, the Windows Phone 8 announcement that's online. You can watch it and
yes.
actually see what they say. But the point was he had mentioned that's one of the powerful things. You can take existing libraries. They'll run anywhere.
Yes.
But it's the bigger package that you're discussing that has to be targeted at specific operating systems in our case.
That's right. That's right. When you talk native renaissance, like I was watching some of that video, and they had like, I think Joe went through like 10 points of like what's new and what's cool on Windows Phone 8. C++ was number 3. Like as he was talking, like,
yep.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like you're talking about like a consumer device and the fact that it supports the C++ programming language, number 3. That's a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
Yeah.
And it was great seeing certain people up there making that announcement, like the Silverlight man. Silverlight's still a beautiful thing, implemented in C++, at least at the lower end.
Sure.
Let's move on to another question by, how would we say that? You're a geek, Hood?
Hawksod.
Hawksod.
I would just call him D.
Dean?
Just D.
D?
0x, 0d, with some H in front.
HD.
Yeah.
All right, interesting.
HD.
HD. All right, HD. Will there be C++ CX support in Windows Phone 8? If not, how can we share code with Windows 8?
So all we've shared at this point is that there will be a native code C++ development experience on the phone. You'll be able to do DX development. With that, you'll be able to build games, that sort of thing, share some code. We haven't announced specifically, okay, well, what are the features that are available? Are you going to have MFC on the phone? Are you going to have WinRT on the, like, we haven't talked to that level of detail yet. We will. We will share in the fullness of time. But the spirit of the question was, hey, I've got some C++ assets. I want to make sure that the stuff I write that works for big Windows, for the Windows client, I want a lot of that code to also run on the phone. We get that, and we're gonna make as much of that happen as we possibly can.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, that goes back to the notion of I have a specific library that I use, and I want it to run in multiple places. One of the things we tell people about why C++ is portability.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Right? And so, totally a fair question.
Yes.
And great answer. We're not going to answer it here, my friends. So,
Pound
CH9 Live or Sharp CH9 Live is what I want to call this, or plus CH9 Live that you mix together.
plus,
oh,
plus,
very
yeah.
nice.
So
four pluses.
Kate, you've been doing a lot of work with C++ AMP.
I really have.
I mean, you've written a book.
I have one chapter left to write.
She wrote
amazing.
A book on AMP.
Absolutely
yes.
amazing.
It's been a year and a week maybe since it was burst out onto the scene, and the minute I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to get hold of this, I have to get a part of this, and before the summer was out, I was talking to the team and starting the book, and it's just a rock and roll technology. I mean, I have a demo that I like to use where we take a particular task, it takes 6 seconds, then we do the same task with C++ AMP, it takes 100 milliseconds.
Okay.
Kind of gets people's attention.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, C++ is a language for performance, and that you can get that kind of performance boost in a language you already know, using the tool you already know how to use. What's not to love?
Agreed.
You know, people are all over that. And that same portability, because the other deal with C++ AMP that's exciting is that it's hardware independent. It's not just one video card manufacturer, it's whatever card, as long as it's DirectX 11, you're good.
Excellent.
And that's a big deal. If you don't completely control the target environment, that's a really big deal.
And I mean, in terms of the real world, in the ecosystem, DirectX 11 is pretty much everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
as far as hardware is concerned.
I think you'll find
DirectX 10
as the Win 8 generation of machines come out there, many of them will be DX11 capable. Cool. I don't want to say all of them, but
a desktop machine. Yeah. It's pretty easy. For a laptop, it can be a bit of a challenge. I had to buy a laptop with that in mind, but you know, you can buy like a $100 video card and get that kind of speed up.
Yes. But so, in a tablet environment, if you have one of the cool things about GPUs, you can offload computation but not eat a lot of electrons.
Yes.
That's right.
And the tablet environment sort of makes a lot of sense for that.
Instead of talking about transactions per second, mm-hmm. talk about transactions per watt, and the GPU is way better. Yes. And so your battery is going to last longer. So
this is another question I'd like to ask. But you don't only want me to ask questions, people. I mean, I know both of these. I talk to them all the time.
Yes.
This is for you. So #CH9Live, #CH9Live, twitter.com. Start asking some questions. You're C++ developers. We're in Europe. You're still sleeping. I get it. So the question that I'd like to ask, how general purpose is GPGPU? Because people might get the false impression that, oh, it's just, I can do everything I want, but I'll get it for lower power.
Right.
No. It's general purpose GPU, which kind of ratchets down genericity. Talk about that.
Well, your problem has to be data parallel.
I'll give you my take afterward.
Okay. Your problem has to be data parallel. So what the GPU likes to do is to do the same simple thing to a very large quantity of data. So if I have a million numbers, and I need you to add 3 to each and every one of them. Yay, GPU's all over that. I have a million numbers, and if it's prime, I want you to double it. If it's odd, I want you to divide it. And sometimes I want you to skip them. GPU does not like that. So you have to have a same instruction, multiple data. It's popular
Cindy.
Phrase. That, great, stick it in the GPU. Got a ton of branching and ifing, and it's going to be different all the time. Mm-hmm. That's a CPU calculation.
Yeah,
see, the general purpose speaks to the fact that, hey, it does stuff other than pixels.
Yes.
You know, it's and I guess that's the fact that it does more than pixels make people refer to it as general purpose.
Okay.
But Kate's right. It's great for data parallel problems. You don't want to put your task parallel application and try and run it on a GPU. It's not good at forking. It's not good at joining. It's not good at branching. The cache behavior is different. CPUs have gotten really smart, very deep caches, branch prediction. Mm-hmm. They go really, really fast in a very general purpose way. Mm-hmm. They do exception handling. They do all this cool stuff that we rely on in programming languages. Mm-hmm. You don't get all of that in the GPU. So it's like a dragster.
Okay.
Dragster doesn't have like GPS and seat belts
or steering wheel.
And necessary or like a real gear shift or anything like that. If you want to go a quarter mile, there's no faster way to go a quarter mile on the ground than a dragster, but that's all it does. If you want to go on a highway, you get a real car, and that's kind of the GPU-CPU comparison.
Okay.
Won't go as fast, but it does. It's much more general purpose, much more generally useful.
Okay.
But still, there's a lot of data parallelism in the world.
Absolutely.
The example that scares me the most, I think, is password cracking. Where you're doing very, very simple calculations on a huge quantity of data.
Mm-hmm.
And if that can be sped up 100-fold, I think it really changes the world we live in.
Yeah.
You know, if your password takes 90 days to crack today by brute force, but I can speed it up 100 times by using C++ AMP, that mm-hmm. means your password only takes 1 day to crack.
Well, I mean, maybe that should be the new marketing slogan. I mean, C++ AMP, you know, speed for hackers.
Your password is swordfish, by the way. Kate's already cracked.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Your LinkedIn password is LinkedIn, am I right?
Oh, no, actually. That's an interesting thing. I mean, security is I'm glad you brought that up, because we're going to be having a security panel today with a few folks and talking about, you know, security for hackers. Hackers is unfortunately a word that has been, you know, what's the right word? Negative.
Maligned.
Yes. I mean, there are good hackers. Everybody hacks. We all hack. When you're writing code, you're hacking. You're hacking. You're trying to solve a problem.
Hacking is bad.
Yeah. Okay. Hacking on a solution. Up all night coding because you love it so darn much.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We've conflated hacking and cracking.
Absolutely.
Cracking is the illegal thing.
Yeah.
Hacking is what you do in your boxer shorts. And, you know.
Fair enough.
trying to get your talk working the night. Maybe that's just me. But, yeah.
So, One of the things I hear from people on the other side of the divide, and it's unfortunate that there's a divide. It's not really a divide. It's a different world. People who live in a virtual machine and those who don't, where the virtual machine is the machine.
Yes.
So security always comes up. Like C++ is like, in modern C++, in this new renaissance, this new age, you're doing 100% of your work for security. For your customers, security, talk to me about it. Do they have any questions like, you know, because you're going native, is there a chance that it's going to be insecure with buffer overruns and integer overflows and blah, blah, blah?
So developers ask that. Managers tend not to, because they don't really care what you write it in as long as it works. But developers do say, wait, what about things like buffer overruns? And it's interesting. People, very respected senior people in this industry, have been advocating certain best practices for a long time, which we've all been ignoring. Mm. Like I have, you know, well, I know I could do that, but I don't like writing function objects, so I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to do it, write my own little for loop or make a little array or whatever. And then you run the risk that your little hand-rolled for loop is stupid and goes past the end or sure, is vulnerable sure. to going past the end because you don't bother checking because it would never be wrong. And with the C++11 language changes, it's astonishing the behavior changes that I have found in myself. I write Great. Different code because I have lambdas. And I'm like, hey, standard library's got something for me. Excellent, I'll just use that. And where before I would have written the loop myself, now if I want to sort something, I call sort. If I want to find something, I call find. And that code is much better tested than whatever I write at 3 a.m. when I'm in a hurry. Yeah,
sure.
So everything becomes more secure, while at the same time it was easier.
Okay.
When, you know, it's wonderful. And it comes directly out of the language changes. I wasn't expecting it. It's not what I would have predicted when we first started seeing that these things were going to happen. But now the subtitle for my pre-con here was Modern C++ Readable, Safe, Fast.
Yes.
And it is all those things. It's not the language of cowboy, buffer overrunning, whatever. Because if you're using those constructs, I'm not writing my own C-style arrays and my own C-style loops to loop through them. Mm-hmm. I'm using a container out of the standard library and I'm accessing it with some algorithm that Stefan or somebody nicely wrote for me.
Yeah.
And he's taking care of all the edge cases mm-hmm. and all the error checking, and I can just use it. So I'm safer and I go home on time.
Great. That's amazing.
That's what I want.
I mean, we use a lot of C++ at Microsoft. Almost every Microsoft product is implemented with our compiler. And security is pretty important to Microsoft. It's very expensive for us to have security issues, right? We have we have a team. We've got to release an update. Like, we take these really seriously. So every bit we can kind of ratchet up security and improve the state of the art for security is greater efficiency, more time we spend building features, less time we spend fixing stuff. Mm-hmm. It's true. Like, you can still do things bad in C++.
It is your foot.
It is. It's getting increasingly difficult. You have to be increasingly deliberate these days mm-hmm. about shooting yourself in the foot. It used to be like, well, the gun was kind of there and it kind of had a hair trigger and your foot was kind of there. And if you now it's kind of like, no, you kind of have to consciously grab the gun and point it down and pull the trigger. Especially with C++ 11, plus, GS and all the stuff that's built into the compiler.
Yeah.
Makes for quite secure software. We're doing some interesting things internally as well to further mitigate buffer overrun problems, kind of rogue code hijacking, writing to places you shouldn't be writing in memory. Mm-hmm. There's more that can be done to make C++ even safer.
Yeah.
We're doing that. Nothing kind of on the immediate horizon in this version of Visual Studio, but stuff that I'm sure will come to light, before too long.
Excellent.
But even if you look at something like the static analysis that's in Dev 11 now, I'm making all my people run their C++ code through that, and it's like, oh, possible uninitialized, whatever, and sometimes these things have been lurking there for a long time.
Yes.
Because when you look it over with your eye, you see what you thought was there.
Totally.
Yes. So it's very helpful, and those are the sorts of things that mess people up in terms of the security.
Absolutely, and GS is a great switch.
Yes.
And actually, I really recently helped out on some work I'm doing with an external person.
Yep.
Not going to mention names or anything, but there were buffer overrun was detected because the cookie didn't align right.
That's
or didn't match or whatever.
That's right.
And it took a little while to figure out what it was. I mean, it doesn't make your life easy to figure out exactly where the problem is.
123.
You're going to have to go in and do some analysis, but it gets you there, and that's great. And the only reason I brought that up is just because as the language modernizes, the security aspects are going to have to also become, you know, in lockstep.
Yes.
Because you know, it's a powerful language. I might not want to use Stefan's algorithms. I might actually want to use my own. And I know there are people out there who don't want to use someone else's, even though they're super fast and great and it's beautiful. Yep. To them, that's essentially managed code. And I say that only because they don't know what's going on underneath, and they sort of give away to an abstraction and continue on. Nothing wrong with that. But if you need to get down there, rock and roll, write it in C, right in line. So it's a beautiful world.
The C++ ethic is about pay for play.
Right.
Like, it's great that we can offer all these features, but the developer always wants the ability to say, yeah, let me opt out of these. I know what I'm doing. You know, let me turn off the autopilot, grab the control stick, and drive myself for a while. And that's okay. We want to provide that capability. At the same time, what we find is that C++ developers tend to be rational people. And if you say, hey, do you want to be more secure for 2% overhead? Is that worth it to you? Mm. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm in.
I'll take that.
Yeah,
give me that. 20%? I'm less enthusiastic about
that.
Right
now I'll take the time and I'll check myself by hand, you know, absolutely. I thought that one of the comments at Going Native was really instructive, saying that the younger C++ developers look at the much older people and look at how they're writing code and say, well, if that smart person is writing code that way, I'm going to do it. So there's some really, really old school habits that are continuing to come forward. And I'd really like to get the word out to people that your default behavior, before you think you have a perf problem, write it the safe way, write it the easy way, use the capabilities that are there for you. And then if you have run a profiler and you actually know that, say, this error checking or this bounds checking is causing you a problem, can you re-architect it so you're guaranteed that you'll never violate the bounds, and then you can skip the check and then do it like sanely? But your first pass through should be as much as possible modern.
Yeah.
Amen. And there's so many great libraries out there that it's really nice to be able to be, I mean, for C++, for general purpose application development on Windows, it's nice to see C++ definitely starting to gain traction.
It's back.
I mean, absolutely.
It's so fun to be doing XAML in C++. It's just really, we just jumped ahead like 15 years, you know?
Yeah.
We went from an MSC world to XAML overnight. And I have a decent designer, the exact same designer as the C# person would have.
Yep.
And I'm just, you can't tell when the app runs what it was written in, unless maybe you can tell that it's a little faster.
Yeah. But what we do need is more general purpose libraries. So now I want to kind of go into that world with Casablanca.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about Casablanca, and both in the server world and also what it gives us on the client?
Yeah, sure. So we announced this project, a month or so ago, called Casablanca. And what it is it's about being able to create and consume RESTful cloud services with C++. So it's about helping C++ developers, make sure that they can build really relevant software. Most relevant software today is a combination of some experience on the device. C++ is great for that. You can get the most out of that device. You can, get the most out of your electrons with the GPU. Yeah. You can do DirectX. You can all that stuff on the device. But then you combine it with some cloud-based experience where you want to go grab maps or you want to go do whatever from the cloud. That can be really hard. Like, doing REST with C++ is kind of a strange task. What's more, when you're building that piece that runs in the cloud, a lot of times you can use .NET, you can use Python, PHP, Node.js, whatever on the cloud, but sometimes you're writing that component on the cloud like, hey man, this is my signal processing thing. I want to take a picture and I want you to do some visual search or something in the cloud. You really want to build that thing in C++. Efficiency matters on the cloud too.
Absolutely.
On the device, it's about battery. On the cloud, you're usually paying for CPU cycles.
You're right.
So the faster you can get it done, really the less you're going to pay. Casablanca helps to solve both of those problems. I'm building some software, I want to create and consume and compose cloud services, and I'm building some server-side component that maybe integrates with Windows Azure that's high performance, and I want to expose and then integrate with other services that are out there running in the cloud.
Great.
Just last night, I got an email from my team. We posted an update that works with Windows 8 release preview as well as Visual Studio 2012.
Great.
RC. So
Awesome.
All the latest compiler support. Yeah, yeah.
Excellent. Speaking of compilers, the Jim Rattigan and company, you have three or four kind of geniuses working on that, the back-end compiler. I'm sure you might have a few more people than that, but I'm talking specifically about auto-vectorization, auto-parallelization.
Yes.
That is rocket science.
Yes.
And I wanted to kind of have you talk a little bit about how that, what is it, how does it work? Not super details, but I mean, now, like back in the day when the concurrency issue was coming up, and we were all concerned, like the future is parallel and concurrent.
Yeah.
And I remember like having conversations with people and being like, the compiler should take care of that. Well, the answer would be, well, you know, it's actually quite complicated
for
the compiler to figure that out. But I'm telling you, you guys have done some amazing work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something that's in the industry
as
well.
It turns out to be hard, but not impossible.
That's right. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's right.
So let's talk about auto-vectorization and parallelization.
Well, Kate mentioned earlier this idea that, hey, I've got this big set of data, and I kind of want to do the same thing to each element of that data. You know, maybe it's a big array, and I want to add one to it, or I want to multiply two arrays or matrices together, something. These are kind of typical patterns. In a nutshell, what vectorization gives you is this. Typically, when I have, let's say I'm adding two integers. I have two operands, I add them together, I get a result. That's great. Vectorization says, well, man, what if you had an array of those and you wanted to do, say, four integers at a time? You want to do the same thing with it, or maybe eight, or you know, it can be arbitrarily wide, but let's take the example of four. I can take four, and then I can do four things, the same thing, to each of those four data items at once.
Yes.
So, for example, if I'm looping over a big array, and I have some operation like this that's vectorizable, literally I can do that array in about one quarter of the time if it's four-wide vectorization than I would if I were doing things element-wise, one element at a time. The rocket science isn't that. That capability's been in Intel hardware for over 10 years, and it's been in supercomputer hardware for 30 years or more.
Okay.
The rocket science is when the compiler can look at a loop and go,
yes,
not that one. Yeah, that one. That one I can vectorize. No, not that. That one I can.
Nice.
And this ability to do the analysis through the loop to determine whether yes or no can I do it, and then actually being able to transform the code to make it run faster.
Into assembler, into the machine language.
That's right. It uses a different instruction set.
Absolutely.
For vectorization called SSE.
Now, the amazing thing is that those guys, again, shouting out to the back-end compiler team, they could still compile Windows very fast. So you have to, here you go, I'm inspecting loops, and which is computing. It takes time.
Yes.
But I'm not going to increase the amount of time it takes to compile Windows and Office and SQL Server.
Right.
That's that's monumental engineering to be able to pull that off. And they have, because they are compiling Windows with this compiler. And it's working, and it doesn't take twice as long or 25% longer, right? So
it's true.
Amazing.
And compile time is very important. I mean, back in the day, I had some clients who had projects that would take 8 hours to compile. And as a result, you accumulate all these changes, and you're like, I'll build it overnight when I go home. And when we think about modern, agile, continuous integration, small check-ins, lots of commits, run your tests on every build, you can't live that life if it takes 8 hours to build.
Yes.
And so the things you've done about making it compile faster are actually enabling good processes to, good developer hygiene to spread out through the industry.
That's
rather
right.
Than people who are like, oh, it's Tuesday, I'll compile.
Yeah, this kind of idea of reducing batch sizes and doing things in a more agile fashion. It's funny, like what we do for the compiler, we actually have test harnesses that compile windows, boot windows, and stress windows. In some cases, we could do it with every check-in on the compiler. So we have a fairly sophisticated test harness where back-end developer does a check-in. We do all this crazy stuff with Windows and SQL to make sure that we didn't break anything.
Yep.
And make sure we didn't regress builds. And I don't know how those guys do it, because like when I write code, it's like I fix this thing over here and like
and break this
I broke this thing over, then I got to go, oh, crap. And these guys they're really good.
Yes.
Really world-class team we have that does the vectorizer. And the whole back-end team.
Yeah.
We got another part of the back-end team that does all the machine-specific optimizations. They do profile-guided optimization. So, yeah, world-class folks working
you know,
on stuff.
Speaking of that, we need to get, I mean, we need to go and get these people on Channel 9, the ones who want to come.
Yes.
Because they, you know, they're way in the background doing monumental engineering.
Yes.
So we should get them on camera and talk to them. I'd love to have them on Going Native. I mean, we should do that.
I'm sure they'd love to be here.
Cool. Yeah. Now, Jim Radigan has started a lecture series on Channel 9 where he's going to basically go through and teach people sort of the theory behind auto-vectorization.
That's cool.
And
you got to have Jim Hogg out here more.
Jim Hogg, absolutely.
The accent just sells it. It
Amen.
Sounds so credible.
It's
Jim
incredible.
Hogg.
But you know, he's not really into Scotch.
Really?
I was disappointed.
I did. This
but
is
you know, to each
is
their
a
own.
Jim Hogg fact I did not.
Jim
know.
Hogg, man.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah.
So
by the way, on this
yes.
on this vectorization note, some of the other neat things that we were able to do with Windows is Windows cares a lot about perf, obviously.
Yeah.
So they had a bunch, they were using intrinsics and they were kind of hand unrolling loops. And what it resulted in is kind of non-modern looking C++ code. You really needed to be a genius to both write and read that code.
That SSE code is like write only.
And they were able to really pull out all of that code in some cases, like pull out all the crazy hand unrolled loops and hand vectorization and just write C++ code and let the vectorizer do its
nice.
Thing. And then now I could go in and I can actually look at those loops and understand
read
what
them.
They do.
It's awesome.
Really cool.
Yeah. It's really,
we used
really
to
cool.
have to trade off between readability and performance. You'd write it once and test it, and then when you had a perf problem, you'd go back and make it just completely opaque. Mm-hmm. I'll just stuff all these ints into one giant long, and then I'll do something with it. And it was unreadable, you know? The idea that I can keep my source code in that human-friendly form,
that's right.
but have it come out in a machine-friendlier form, it's all you can want,
it's awesome.
Really.
What it's about.
Yeah, yeah. It's
I
wonderful.
Mean, Visual Studio is really like a mesh of compilers.
Yep.
Because the experience of writing code is just a compiler, right? Compiler, database, front end, back end. So it's really nice to see sort of this compiler renaissance, man.
Yeah.
And these things moving into the forefront very explicitly. I love it. And we'll get more of that stuff on Channel 9. Ask questions live. #CH9Live, #CH9Live. We have Steve Teixeira, Kate Gregory here. Topic is C++ or C or C++ CX. So come on, let's talk about VC++.
C++
AMP.
C++ CLI.
Yes.
Choose your acronym.
One of the questions I think is interesting, but I'm going to ask this guy. Hey, thank you, Gert. Is native code in Win8, WP8, still Win32?
Everybody just wants a little bit more information.
So, you know what? I could see how there could be some confusion there.
Yeah. So, native code and our question disappeared. I was trying to parse it in my head.
Question disappeared, my friends.
But there's a lovely countdown that looks like it, something's
going to fall off. So the question was, is native code in Win8 and WP8 still Win32?
Or is it completely replaced by WinRT? Okay, now I get the question. So, native code in Windows 8, there's still Win32. Mm-hmm. You can still build a Win32 app and run it as a desktop app.
Absolutely.
You can still build a Metro app and call a smaller set of Win32 APIs. So it's not all WinRT. A lot of the new APIs that have been added, there's a bunch of new API surface area that is WinRT based. And WinRT is super cool. I love the idea of landing on a standard ABI and getting all the languages playing as equal citizens on the
Absolutely.
Platform. That's huge. That's a subset of the Windows API. Some of it's still Win32.
Mm-hmm.
I think that answers the question. On the phone side, again, they haven't really divulged a lot of detail about what the API surface area looks like to this point. But more of that information will be forthcoming as time rolls on.
For sure.
I mean, we have options for on Windows 8. You know, I have MFC apps that run on Windows 8, just happy as clams.
Runs really
well. And then I have like a XAML Metro app that is going through WinRT. And I really like sort of the Gordian knot cutting that WinRT did, where it's, instead of saying, it would be nice if you were async, you should be polite and be async. Mm-hmm. It turns out we're not that thoughtful, you know? We're like, well, for now I'm going to do it the easy way, and then later if I ever have a perf problem, I'll go async, and then we never did. Haha, all there is async versions, have fun.
Yes.
And then so now you're going to do it right.
You know, you bring up, I'm really glad you segued there, because for
for C++ developers who've lived in a world of, say, writing rendering engines where they're aggressively sequential for any number of reasons.
Yeah.
To be put into a world where, no. You're going to have to use like PPL,
yep.
wrap it in a task,
yeah.
call get on it, makes it look like it's synchronous to a call or whatever, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of learning that does have to go on
yes.
when you present people with a very yes. asynchronous world. And for C++ developers, because there is no async await in the language,
right.
and that's a language thing.
Right.
I know Herb's kind of likes it.
There's a future thing going to yeah. happen, but...
PPL.
Yeah, PPL tasks is great. You just say with the then. You know, you set up your task, dot then, whatever you want to do next, a lambda, dot then, a lambda. It feels pretty natural.
Yeah.
There, it's a challenge sometimes to debug it.
Yes. yes. What does this call stack mean?
I don't know where I am at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's some tricky things about getting off the UI thread, or we still have to pay attention to marshalling things between threads. So there are some subtleties. But there will be reference apps coming out. There will be documentation. I mean, we're not out yet.
Right.
Right. We haven't RTM'd, and so we're all kind of navigating this new space and learning our way around it together. Mm-hmm. And kind of like having something new to learn.
Absolutely.
You know? I got used to it. Now we're going to learn C++ 11. You know, that's new. Now we're going to learn new operating system API. Bring on some more.
Awesome. Are you going to come to C++ and beyond?
I think I might take the rest of the summer off. I'm having a little bit of a career. I was at Tech Ed Orlando, now I'm here, and now I'm going to Australia for Imagine Cup,
wow.
Worldwide Finals, so then I think I might just curl up in a hammock.
It's a lot of miles.
Good for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Good for
yeah.
you.
But, yeah. I'll watch as soon as stuff is uploaded.
The PPL thing is really cool. Windows, the Windows team actually didn't initially know about that programming model for asynchronous usage. They knew about it like as a parallel thing. Mm-hmm. And then it was actually one of our architects on the team, a guy called Artur, he's the guy that pointed out, like, yeah, this pattern, this async pattern you guys are doing, if you use tasks, that would look way better. Here, let me show you. Yeah. And so there's kind of a seminal blog on the either the Visual C blog or the Parallelism blog that kind of says, hey, this is how you do it with PPL. And since that point, it's become... everybody's kind of pivoted and went, oh yeah, if I'm doing C++, that's the pattern I'm going to use.
Yes.
We worked really hard with Intel to align their TBB with our PPL. So there's great similarity and overlap between the two. And then we jointly took that to the ISO committee and suggested, hey guys, don't you think like C++ needs this? Maybe next time we talk about standardization, we should have some kind of task-centric, await style, continuation style programming model.
Yes.
And there was great enthusiasm there. So I'm, fingers crossed that this is going to be kind of the way we're going to do things going forward, even in a standards-based way. So if I have some code, I want to take it to Linux or Mac or iPhone, whatever, I can write it the same way, and I can port that code everywhere.
Absolutely.
Very important. That's why people write C++.
You're right.
Right.
They want it to go fast. They want it to be parallel, or they want it to be compatible with their existing source assets, or they want it to be cross-platform.
Totally. And they want to use C libraries. I mean, cryptography libraries that are out there are written in C, yeah. a lot of them. And they're not going to be touched.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice to be able to...
Until Kate cracks them all with her
GPU. She's going to crack them all.
And they'll write some new ones.
Rock and roll.
Just to be glad I'm taking the summer off. Your passwords are safe for a while.
So what are some of the other things that you're working on over in C++ world?
Oh gosh.
Besides shipping a product.
Yeah, shipping is kind of all consuming, and then we have this impending wave of work that's piled up for after Dev 11. We've got to do the Windows XP support. We've talked about doing a new Express product for desktop applications. Someone announced that a couple weeks ago. That will also support Windows XP, so it's kind of everything you want all in one box.
That's great.
So we've got that work to do. We're going to continue to work on C++ 11 conformance. We've got a highly conformant set of libraries on the compiler side. We're kind of part of the way there, but we still have a lot of work to go on the compiler side. So we got to go get that out there in the community.
Yep.
We're working on looking at what is the C++ library surface area. Herb motivated this conversation.
At Going Native,
yep. Kind of demonstrating, hey, Java and .NET have these standard libraries that are this big. C++ looks like this, and
yes.
So consequently, like, we all write our own thing, right? We
yes.
all write our own our own search and our own sort and our own, you know,
and
whatever.
And image manipulation and XML yes. parsing and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, HTTP requests.
Right.
That's a fun one.
So that's one of the other things we're looking at is how can we help play a community role? It's not really a Microsoft Visual C++ thing, but how can we help motivate the community to make progress in this dimension?
Awesome. And Kate, what are some, I mean, it's really awesome to hear you're 100% native. Kate Gregory's gone way native. I love it. It's beautiful. Let me ask you this. What are some of your key learnings and what advice do you have for other people that are coming back to a full-time gig writing native code?
I would say it is not the C++ you remember. That's the most important thing. It almost feels like a new language. So take the time. Don't be like, oh, I don't need that. I don't know what that new thing is. Figure out what that new thing is. And trust the libraries as much as you can. Stop trying to roll your own. I know we have a real pride point. This is, I can do that. Don't do that first, you know. You be prepared to be very happily surprised about what's waiting for you. The C++ of today is easier to write than the C++ of old. It's just as easy as a managed language to write. Mm-hmm. You know, we say if you're typing delete, you're doing it wrong.
Okay,
fair enough. A lot of the things you think you have to do, you don't. So take a little time to do some reading, and then you'll do it. The easy way will also be the safe way and the higher performing way. And that feels counterintuitive, but that is the new normal.
Amen. Right on. Now, it's interesting because when you introduced C++ CX,
yes.
the initial backlash was, we're not going to go down that rabbit hole, but even for me, it's uncomfortable sometimes writing hats. Auto removes that. You don't like hats, use auto.
See, I cut my teeth largely on Pascal. So the fact that I get to put hats in every now and then makes me...
It's like a little warms my nostalgia.
Heart. Yeah, I feel good about it.
Right on, right on. Well, I know, you know, the power of auto and lambdas, and but that's one of them because I've been writing since C++ CX, and it's been like, wow, I don't have to remember to do the hat and blah, blah, blah. I just say auto.
What I really love about auto is when you change your mind about something, you know, you change the type of something up on line 3, and then you have like 50 or 100 or 200 lines that are, really they all depend on that. And with auto, you don't have to edit those lines. You know, so if you go from a vector of ints to a vector of floats or to a list of ints or whatever, it all just falls out properly. And so I spend a lot less time doing stupid mechanical edits.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of the computers can do that. They're quite good at that. And I can use my brain for better stuff.
Right on. So let's talk about, I mean, we hear the term all the time, modern developers and modern computing, modern UI design, modern programming. Let's talk about modern C++ in the modern world, where, in our case, you're programming against a COM ABI, which we call WinRT, which is COM, or newer
sort
COM,
of.
Whatever. It's but it's COM-y.
It's COM, but not as we know it.
Not as we know it. Yeah. And talk to me a little bit about that experience and what you're seeing in the real world, both of you, with C++ developers writing Windows runtime apps or Windows 8 apps, Metro apps, XAML plus DX.
People are having to sometimes, they start doing it and it gets harder and harder and harder, and then they stop and read the documentation and pull back. So I saw this a lot with things like lifetime management of something that you ref new.
Okay.
Talk about
that.
Well, you know, when you ref new something, mm-hmm. It'll be reference counted. When the counts go away, it'll get cleaned up. But if it's a member variable, the counts may never go away. Mm-hmm. You may be looking for the equivalent of dispose, which there really isn't. And then it turns out, hey, why don't you just trust the stack? Why don't you just put that object on the stack, and it'll go out of scope. And you're like, oh, that's better than this 400 lines of code that I was swearing at, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of times like that where people come barging in and they're sure they know what to do, or they know what they used to do in C#, so they figure they're going to do the same thing. And you have to sort of embrace a C++ way of thinking. Mm-hmm. And a big part of that is the stack semantics is your friend.
Yeah.
It's okay to pass things by value because we have, you know, move semantics under the covers and things going on. But to be able to relax and get that trust in instead of trying to do it yourself, we have a habit of being do-it-yourselfers, so
yes,
it's a lesson to learn. Yeah.
Excellent. And that's very sage advice for people out there. Thank you for turning in. We were going to do Going Native Live all day long, but Larry thought that wasn't a great idea. So, you know, whatever, Larry. Just kidding. But we'll see you guys soon. We'll see you again.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming on Channel 9.
Thank you.
And thank you for doing the great things that both of you do.
Thanks to you.
Rock and roll.
Thanks, Charles.